Hey, everybody, this is Michael Horse, Tonto from the movie The Legend of the Lone Ranger and from Twin Peaks. You're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome, 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 fans of cartoons, comics, and the heroes that keep us cheering and the villains that keep us hissing. This is Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Today, we are returning to those thrilling days of yesteryear in an episode that is long overdue. I've been wanting to take a look back at the 1981 Western adventure, The Legend of the Lone Ranger. The Masked Man, he is one of my favorite characters. And in 1981, just a mere 3 weeks before my cinematic perspective changed forever with the release of Raiders of the Lost Ark, the greatest movie of all time, by the way. Before that film opened, I was obsessed for 3 weeks with The Legend of the Lone Ranger. Today, the man who brought Tonto to life in that film, the tremendous actor and artist Michael Horse, he is going to be along to join us today. Going to have some fun heading back to the Old West with Michael. So glad you're along for the ride. Silver's here, Scout is here, we're all here. We're going to take a kick back, get a drink, and we're going to take a look at The Legend of the Lone Ranger. We're also going to talk animated adventures, we're going to talk Twin Peaks, a lot to get to with Michael today. First, check this out, then I'll be back to hit the dusty trails with Michael Horse. Michael was born in Southern California of Yaqui descent, and acting was the furthest thing from his mind. Focused on art and music, his first acting gig came as quite a surprise when he was offered the iconic role of Tonto in 1981's The Legend of the Lone Ranger.
Although his reputation was legendary, his identity remained a secret, for he rode to fame on a white stallion with his trusted Indian friend. And a black mask across his face.
I want you to take me to Cavendish.
Now, the truth is told, and the mask is lifted in The Legend of the Lone Ranger. Rated PG.
Now, the character of Tonto was created for the Lone Ranger radio show back in 1933 as a way of giving the title hero, played by George Seton, someone to talk to, namely actor John Todd as Tonto. In 1949, Tonto was brought to life on TV screens by Jay Silverheels in the long-running television series, and when producers of the feature film Reimagining of the Lone Ranger set out to cast the masked man and his companion in the fight for justice, Michael got the call. Now, while the film didn't exactly blow up the box office like the Lone Ranger and Tonto blew up Butch Cavendish's hideout in the amazing climax of the film, it did set Michael Horse on a course for some very cool acting gigs, including roles in Knight Rider, Walker, Texas Ranger, The X-Files, and a long-running role in Twin Peaks, both the original series and the recent reboot, as Deputy, now Deputy Chief, Tommy Hawk Hill. Along the way, Michael has jumped back into the comics and animation worlds with voiceover roles in Superman, Young Justice, and The Hulk. On my guest today, he is a talented Renaissance man. He has acted in live action and voiceover. He is also an accomplished artist, musician, jeweler, and he's even got his own action figure. A big welcome to Michael Horse. Michael, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Well, welcome. I'm a big fan. You know, I grew up in the 50s, so you got to be a big fan of comic books, you know.
Oh, are you a comic book fan? I wasn't sure. That's all. Usually one of my questions, but did you read comic books?
Oh, sure. That's all we had. That, Mad Magazine, and Bad Television. That's all we had in the 50s. You know?
Oh, I just did a couple-part retrospective on Mad Magazine. I'm in Columbus, Ohio. There's an art exhibit. Well, you're an artist. You love art exhibits. There's a whole art exhibit of Mad Magazine, all original art. So it's here through October. So if you're in Ohio, I'll take you through it.
I'm a collector of animation art. You know, my mom, when she was young and they moved from Arizona to Southern California, where I grew up, she worked for Disney. She used to hand paint the cells, you know, and she used to bring them home for us to play with them. God knows where most of them went, but I have one from Fantasia.
Oh, I've got one. An original?
Yeah. Yes, I've got one from Bambi, and I have a sketch of Two Gun Mickey on a piece of sketch paper that I had to take to the Disney Museum. I don't know why it's up where I live in the Bay Area, but it is, and give them to anticipate it for me, you know. But I do a lot of animation voices. It's so much fun. It's all the people you went to school with used to make gas noises and sent to the principal's office, you know.
Now you're getting paid for it now. You turned it into bank, man. That's what you got to do, right? You take all those. That's a skill set. That's a learned skill set, right?
People that had imaginary friends and pets. You know, Frank Volker, I don't know. He does every animal in the world. He does. He looped Cujo's voice. He's the hummingbird in Pocahontas.
He did the monkey in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh yeah, he's also I did Curious George, and we're really good friends. And but I'm sure that Frank Haight was locked in the closet and had imaginary pets when he was little.
I've been trying to get him on the show forever. He does not do interviews, he's a genius.
Oh, he's the sweetest, kindest guy too. He's so nice, you know. But it's like old stand-up comics and I worked with a lady on Rugrats, and she was like being a babysitter and Phil and Lil, and she's having a three-way conversation with herself back and forth. And
oh man,
I went, did you have nobody to play with when you were little? But it's so much fun. And I have my wife and I have a new animated series that we're working on out of the Art Institute in San Francisco.
Oh, you've got something new coming up.
Oh yeah, about a coyote and a crow that have a gas station in the middle of New Mexico. It's freaking hysterical.
No way. Is this something you're producing, or is it something you're doing the voiceover for somebody else?
I'm producing it with them, out of the Art Institute. And it's old school animation. It's computer animated, but it's like old Roadrunner type. I won't go into the whole thing about
no, it. But when can we look for that? Because is that going to be like 2018, 2019?
Oh, 2019 should be.
Okay, so it's got some production going on. But are you, I'm getting way, 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 way ahead of myself. But are you on social media too?
It's so funny. My wife goes, "You want to get on Facebook?" I went, "No, no."
It sounds like you're going to have to now if you've got a new animated series coming out. Yeah, you're going to need a Facebook page for that.
I did get on Instagram, and it's so funny. Like the other day, I was showing I go, "Look, here's me and the lady that wrote Color Purple. She's a friend of ours. I have 75 likes." She goes, "Your cat Carlos has 3,000. I'm like, "Oh man, that's good." You know, I went to the Twin Peaks Festival in London. And people were screaming, "Carlos, Carlos!" And they're bringing cat toys, and you know, so it's very humbling. It really.
Well, that's the thing. You got this whole Twin Peaks audience. Look, we're going to talk Lone Ranger. We're definitely going to talk Lone Ranger. But there's this whole new audience coming in. Plus you've got all the animation, Superman, Batman. We're going to talk about that. You need some social media out there, my friend. That's definitely. Look, Okay, I'm going to back up for a second. I mentioned jeweler. I thought that was one of the most interesting things on your resume. You're a silversmith.
Oh yeah, my family were silversmiths and artists. Okay. So I grew up. I never wanted to be in the acting business. I was a musician. I played off and I did a lot of. I played with Etta James.
You're
a
fiddle player, right?
Bill Tilly. Yeah, I was fiddle and bass player. You know, okay. But I never wanted to do that either. I just got on the road when I was young, and I'm hitchhiking. And that's the only way you keep from being beat up if you're in Texas or someplace, you know. What are you, kid? I'm a musician. Are you any good? God, I hope so. You know, the truck drivers would drop you off in a cornfield and, you know, come, you know, next truck would be 4 hours. You sit there playing the fiddle.
Oh,
but I got in, you know, I was kind of an amateur, you know, I grew up with horses, amateur stuntman, and did a few things, but I didn't want to be in the movies. And I was renting my art studio from an agent. And she came down one day and she says, "You want to be Tonto and the Lone Ranger?" And I went, "No, because I'm an American Indian Movement member." And I knew Jay. I grew up with him. And even in
this is Jay Silverhill's, original Tonto,
I knew his kids, and I actually got to talk to him a couple of times. And even in that stereotypical role, we as Native kids saw the real thing, saw this dignity under that role, you know. And even in Mr. Moore, you know, you could see that there was a respect and a love for Jay with him. You know, I searched the whole internet to see if there was any feuds or anything with him. I couldn't find a single thing.
Oh, he was the Lone Ranger. No, he was the Lone Ranger. Like, literally. I mean, even during your movie, that we'll talk about the controversy with him, but he. Like, you're right. He kept his dignity, and I think Jay Silverhill's kept his dignity through all that. I'm kind of interested too, of because you kind of always go back to this because okay, so you grew up watching The Lone Ranger. Is that correct? You did see it.
Oh, you saw
the TV show,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay. So how did, because there's always this, well, okay, there's sort of a stereotypical Native American, okay, but there's a Native American on television in a starring role. So I kind of want to get your perspective from your community, your family, your friends. How did they perceive that of Jay Silverhill's?
It was a mixed blessing. We all knew that it was a stereotypical role. There was kind of a step and fetch it character. But Jay had such dignity about him, and he was a great actor. I mean,
yeah.
he actually had a Native American acting workshop in Los Angeles that, you know, that some of the guys I grew up with, other Native actors, really good ones, went to his acting school, you know. And
there's good and bad actors everywhere, and, right? I mean, it's not isolated to any, to any group.
So I was renting my art studio from an agent. She said, "You want to be Tom Ranger?" And I said, "No." And she kept asking me, and I said, "Nah, I'm really not interested," you know.
Yeah.
And then they were going to pay me a decent sum of money, and she told me, I went, "Oh, I'll go down." And I talked to Mr. Fraker, who I'm a fan of Westerns. I grew up with Westerns and, yeah. You know, and a great cinematographer. And I said, "Look, you know, if you send Tonto to town one time, there's going to be more Indians on your lawn than Custer saw," you know? And he goes, "Well, we're trying to fix that." And I went, okay. So they hired me and, you know, and they took the mask away from Clayton Moore, which was a big mistake.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
after
yeah.
The,
yeah.
After the whole film was over, I did a celebrity rodeo down in Los Angeles, and Mr. Moore was there, and I came up and I said, "Mr. Moore, I'm Michael Works." He goes, "I know who you are, son." And I go, "I'm so sorry, sir. You will always be the Lone Ranger to me. Long may you ride." He went, "Well, how sweet." And I said, "I mean it." And we had a picture. I still have a picture of him and me together. And, you know, that was a big mistake, yeah.
Oh yeah, and we'll talk about that. I kind of want to get your perspective on that during filming too. And it's but I mean, here's the thing is that like even in the TV series with Jay Silverhills, I mean, yeah, it was a stereotypical role, but boy, did he do so much with that. And I'm going back and rewatching a lot of these things now, and there's so many times where he just throws down. Like he is just I mean, you do not mess with Tonto, you do not mess with Jay Silverhills in that TV series.
Well, yeah. Well, that was one of the problems with the newer film. You know, I knew one day they were going to do another Lone Ranger film.
Oh, you're getting so far ahead of me. You're getting so far ahead of me.
We'll get this beautiful guy off the reserve. I'll be known as the guy that did the not so good one my whole life. And I'm a huge Johnny Depp fan. But I mean, what were you thinking? You don't make Tonto an idiot. And, you know, just because you want to do about Tonto, you don't make the Lone Ranger a secondary, you know, so. But you know the creator looked down upon me and said, "I'm going to make this so bad that people aren't really going to even remember the one you did." But you know it didn't.
I think you may have answered like 17 of my questions that I've got listed here.
The film was so you know the film that I did was not very well written, and it didn't take me long to figure out in film it's only going to be as good as it's written. I mean, I look for the story when things are, you know, and you know, there's so much stuff that's out there that isn't really that good. And sometimes, you know, if you want to make a living, you just have to take some. But I've turned down so many things because they're just not, it's not on the page. If it's not on the page, it's not going to be on the screen, you know. Sometimes I'll do a film and my wife goes, "Why were you so good in this one?" I said, "Because the dialogue is good. It makes me look smart. It makes me look clever."
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's, and we'll talk, we'll get into this. I've full disclosure again, I love the film. I love Legend of the Lone Ranger. We're going to talk about that. I want to kind of go back. So when you're growing up, go ahead.
Yeah. When I look back on it, you know, I mean, I don't even want to see this ever again. And I look back on it and people have real fond memories of it. So there were, but you know, and I did a great job. I mean, they almost didn't want to hire me because I was, you know, I was a Native activist. And you know, the guy that played the Lone Ranger was so bad he made me look like Olivier, you know?
Jeez. You've answered about 20 questions I haven't even asked yet. How do you know what's in my brain? Let's back up a little bit before we get to there. We'll get there. Let's back up a little bit. So growing up, so you did see the Lone Ranger growing up. I kind of want to get a sense of like what kind of kid you were. And I've heard you talk about this before too, about, because look, I don't have this perspective. You know, most people don't have this perspective, but growing up and in the education system, you had a problem you had a problem with this growing up too, didn't you? Like just what you were being taught as a kid, right?
Oh yeah. Because even though, you know, I was born and grew up in Los Angeles, I would go back to, I'm Yaku Nyomai, and I would go back. My grandma would take me home in the summertime when everybody's going to the beach and I'm out in the desert when it's like 110 degrees. But I grew up in the culture, and Los Angeles has the biggest urban native population in the country. So I grew up in, you know, I used to dance at the powwows. I grew up with other native people. I mean, I can understand some Navajo, some Apache, some Lakota, some Cheyenne. I can understand bits and pieces of it because I grew up with these guys, you know. So, I mean, I didn't grow up, you know, not knowing my culture, you know.
Mm-hmm. You said Yaqui, right?
Yeah, Yaqui.
So is Michael Horse isn't your given it. What was your Yaqui name?
It's Horse. It's from my grandfather. From my
Horse is your Yaqui name. Is that Dreamer of Horses?
No, that's another name that I can't tell you what that is.
Okay, because I read an interview with you like back in the day, and you talked about like your Yaqui name was Dreamer of Horses, and I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, but I can't. I don't want to tell you in Yaqui because it's personal. My name.
Oh, okay.
It's a personal thing.
No problem at all. But I thought that was interesting because you ended up being in the Lone Ranger, a scout, right?
Yeah. I was raised by my stepfather, a wonderful, wonderful man, and he adopted me when I was 9 or 10.
What kind of kid were you?
He was a great kid.
What kind of kid were you?
I was a very quiet kid. I was a very quiet, very introspective kid. You know, I was very shy. You know, people look at me now and go, huh? I was very, very shy. I was dyslexic too. I had a problem. I had a learning problem. So, you know, but I was always drawing pictures and, you know, and, like I said, I grew up in Los Angeles, but we grew up in the San Fernando Mountains. So we had horses and, you know, I'd ride my horses up there and my dad was a big time, like a guide, like a hunting guide and did a lot of fishing and, you know, so I grew up with that, you know, so I grew up with being outdoors, you know.
Okay, so riding a horse was second nature to you.
Oh, yeah, we grew up with horses, yeah.
Okay, so it was always artwork was, being an artist, that was always primary with you.
Yeah, oh, yeah, being an artist, that's still primary to me.
Okay,
that's what
how did you get into being a stuntman?
Well, I used to work horses. I used to walk horses down at Santa Anita, you know, and I used to, sometimes I get a job, you know, like working on a movie as an extra or something. And one day they said, one of you guys, we need you to ride across the desert. We're going to shoot off a gun and we want you to fall off like you're shot. And I used to try and do rodeo, you know, and I sucked at it. And I went, I fall off, I get paid. I'm getting the wrong end of this, man. Staying on has been the hard part, man, you know.
That's great. Okay, so you kind of went into that. What were you doing stunts in? What? I mean, like, what is there a film that we can look at you like flying off a horse that we know it's you?
Oh God, I'm not going to see. You got to find these on your own.
Dig it. Yeah, we got to go back digging a little bit. Yeah, no worries at all.
There's enough of those. Yeah.
Okay. Now we've come to this part where, okay, so you're renting space as an artist, right?
Yeah, I was renting a house from a lady that was my first agent.
Okay, so you agent like stuntman. So you're getting gigs as a stuntman at this point.
Yeah, not a lot of them.
Okay, but enough that there's an agent, and then all of a sudden she comes in and says, "Do you want to be Ton?" How does that happen?
Yeah, she wasn't even really my agent. She was my landlord, and it was really funny because she handled Jack Nance from Razorhead from Twin Peaks, you know. Yeah, so
connection there, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like 30 years old. She says, man, they're looking for somebody like you to be Tonto Lone Ranger. You want to go down and see these guys? I went, no. I said,
okay,
well,
okay, why did you say no?
Because it was not the most dignified of rules.
You're thinking Jay Silverhills. You're thinking, yeah, it was great that he did that, but Faithful Companion.
Not really what I wanted to do. Right. You know, and I really didn't want to be in the movies that much. I mean, it wasn't really what I wanted to do, you know. So, you know, I was thinking, no. And, you know, and they
But there had to be some part of you, but there had to be some part of you that said, maybe I can do something with this. Maybe I can make something.
Yeah.
There had to be some part of you.
Dennis Banks, one of the founders of the American Indian Movement member, who was kind of a mentor to me and you know, to the day he died, man, I would see him. He said, Michael, you should do this because you might get a chance to rectify some of this stereotypes, you know, and there was times, you know, there were things that I said, and, you know, one time during the film, I said to Mr. Fraker, I said, I want to ride first. He goes, no. And I go, look, man, yeah, I'm following this guy around like a dog, man. I want to ride first. And he went, okay. You know,
okay,
go ahead.
Oh, he listened to you.
But we became really good friends.
But your mentor, though, that you had mentioned, that resonated with you then, that made you see the Lone Ranger and Tonto as something different, maybe something bigger than it was.
Oh yeah. And I got to do a lot after that. I got to do a lot of stuff in the community. I was MCs for a lot of events and got to do stuff for kids, you know, and, you know, lobbied for the Indian Child Welfare Bill and, you know, and worked went and talked to kids on the reservations and reserves and,
oh, wow.
You know, so I got to do some stuff with it. So yeah, it was a, you know, but I thought when I got into this, I thought, you know, am I ever going to be able to show my face in a powwow again? You know, so.
Well, in all fairness, though, your only reference was the Jay Silverhills. And it's kind of like when people were talking about Batman in the mid to late 80s, they really only had the Adam West Batman as a reference. So people were like, well, is it going to be campy? Is it going to be? So in all fairness, you know, you didn't really have much of a reference point.
No, I didn't even read the script, so I didn't have any idea, you know. So, but it was a great experience, you know. And like I said, the casting of the Lone Ranger and Clinton was very kind and very respectful to me, but he had a lot of problems.
Yeah, no, we'll chat about that. I thought this was interesting too because look, obviously they kind of went the Superman route of, you know, let's get a bunch of big, huge actors. And then for the primary role, let's cast an unknown. So they kind of went that. I love this quote from an interview with you at the time. I think it was just about to come out. I don't think it had come out. You were talking about your acting experience when you were cast. You said, I never even played a mushroom in a school play.
Yeah.
I love that quote.
I didn't want to be an actor, you know? It wasn't what I wanted, you know, but I've actually had a long career and I've got a chance to actually do some really, you know, do some really good work in my life, you know.
And you're good in the film, you know, though. That's what blows me away is that this is your first acting role and you're really good in it.
I was just being myself, pal. I was just trying to not fall off the horse and not say anything.
Because you were so used to falling off the horse as a stuntman, now you got to stay on it again. Now you're back to your rodeo days.
You know, we were filming in New Mexico in Santa Fe, you know, and that's where I sell most of my art. I went to for a very brief time to the Art Institute in Santa Fe. So
okay.
I'm with people that I knew and, you know, and distant relatives and all kinds of stuff that worked on the film, you know.
We mentioned earlier that you're a silversmith. This makes total sense now, that whole scene where you're like pushing the silver bullets on John Reed.
I kept stealing the silver bullets.
Do you have any in your house right now?
No, God knows. God knows where a lot of that stuff went.
Were they actual silver or were they fake silver?
Yeah. I'll tell you the funniest story. So we're on the tour to promote this all over, right? And Clinton's in his suits and everything.
Right.
And so the guy that's in charge of all the PR is with us from the film, and he's trying to take these boxes of silver bullets on the plane. And this was actually before they had a lot of problems with all that stuff,
right?
You know, because they were giving them away. Yeah, they were giving away as gifts to people all over the country.
And they're real silver.
Yeah, they're real silver. So, and they're you know, so the guys at the security goes, you can't take these bullets in there. And the guy goes, this is the Lone Ranger, and this is Tonto, and this is the silver bullets. And the guy would go, right. So then he would call over, his supervisor, and we would, the guy would go, this is Tonto, this is the Lone Ranger, these are their silver bullets. And he'd go, uh-huh.
This is where Clayton Moore would have come in handy.
Yeah, yeah, we had to go through about four or five people, you know. You know, Clayton Moore had told me a story. I said, why didn't they use you? And he says, yeah, he says, you know, I knew that they were going to retire me. And I said, look, you know, give me, I don't want $1 billion, but give me some money. And he says, let's do this story where I find this kid that's on the fence between right and wrong. And maybe about a third of the film, I'll turn my back to him and hand him the mask. And I went, and chills went on the back of I went, and they didn't buy that.
See, I love that.
There would have been just massive, massive cheers and tears in the audience.
See, you know? I love that because that's a literal handing off of the baton of the mask. But it's just, it makes sense because the Lone Ranger is not really about one man. It's about an idea. It's kind of like they've been doing that with Batman now. It's like, it's not the guy, it's the Batman. And you saw that in the Nolan movies. Yeah, that's such a brilliant idea. I don't know why they didn't jump at that.
You know, and it's the myth of the West. It's called a participatory myth that, you know, of right and wrong and justice and, you know, how things should be. One of the guys in the FBI told me, he says, you know, they still study, you know, the Lone Ranger part of the FBI of, you know, to never to shoot, to kill, and, you know, and try to wound somebody rather than kill them. And, yeah, you know,
No, it's interesting because at the time, again, I want to go back to that interview. This was a film you described at the time about being about brotherhood and justice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it was about, there's all kinds of people that started this country, you know, even though it's historically how brutal it was to indigenous people. And, you know, again, as a kid, reading the history books, you know, when I was in Los Angeles, I grew up with a lot of Chumash people from that area, and they were master navigators. They sailed all over the world. They find Chumash canoes in Peru. And my kid bring home her school book, says Balboa discovered the Pacific Ocean. I go to her teacher, you know, she's in grade school. I go, what? These people never noticed the ocean? Thank you, white brother. I never saw that. You know, so it's just wrong, you know? So, I mean, I grew up knowing the true history of you know, what had been done to indigenous people. Right. So,
but isn't this the beauty of the film? And isn't this the beauty of the concept of the Lone Ranger and Tonto? Is that there is this bond that transcends all of that. And even in the film, and I want to get into this because you mentioned about the script, but I personally love the script because there's an element of it where Tonto makes it very clear that I'm helping him. I'm saving him, first of all, because he's my brother. Second of all, yeah, I think he can help us. And at the point where if he does not help us, I will end him. I think that's brilliant. I think that's brilliant in that script because you've never seen that before. But isn't that the beauty of the concept of the Lone Ranger and Tonto?
Yeah, there was saving dialogue. That's the one thing that got me, or I probably would have quit before we even started it. There were saving pieces of dialogue in there, you know.
When was the last time you saw the flick?
Oh, God, it's one of those things you can't even find it in the video store, man.
I just got it on Amazon, brother. Blu-ray. I just got it on Amazon on Blu-ray, and I just watched it.
I ran it for my grandson last year. He had never seen it.
Okay, so you've seen it recently then.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think of it? Now, not 30 years or 30, boy, oh, boy, what are we at? 36 years ago, Michael Horst, but 2018, Michael Horst.
To be disrespectful to the legend and to all the fans and all the people that said I did a good job in it. Not my favorite film. not, okay. You know, it's still, you know, they're going to save all us indigenous. There's a non-native person's going to save, you know, it's like Dances with Wolves. God bless it. It's in the language. It's still gonna, you're counting on this white man is going to save.
You want a movie called Tonto. You want to start a movie called Tonto.
Tonto and his faithful companion, Angler. Angler is not very smart, but he has a great sense of the earth. Go to town, Angler.
I love this. This was a brutal shoot. Four and a half months you guys were shooting. Monument Valley in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it was wonderful. I mean, that's my living conditions as a kid. You know, I mean, I had a great time.
Looks beautiful.
You know, and I'm on my horse. And, you know, basically, you know, I tell my wife, I said, I miss making westerns. You know, I just did Godless, which was a lot of fun. There actually is one great scene in there where this mine blows up and I'm scolding the people, you know. Again, I didn't want to do it. They didn't want to pay me very much. And it's Scott Frank that wrote Logan and the script for Get Shorty. And I went, okay. I'm in.
Okay, yeah.
But they cut a lot of my work out of it, you know, not because it wasn't any good, just because there was too much there. And there was parts of the story that they didn't need to follow. But I miss westerns. I really do. I miss them.
Well, I think y'all really do. But isn't that what impacted this film too? I think at the time, because look, 81. You guys are shooting in 80. I think. Boy, it was just such a Star Wars universe at that point.
And Star Wars is a western. Star Wars is nothing but a western.
It is, but I don't think. But I think people. I think the audience at that time saw the Lone Ranger as archaic. And my goodness, I mean, we talk about timing. My personal favorite film of all time is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Michael Horse, you, my friend, you got a 3-week window where I was obsessed with the Lone Ranger, but then it all changed 3 weeks later. my whole world changed. Everybody's world changed. Again, there's so many things playing against this film. I feel bad for it. It was just such bad timing.
I'm really touched by people like yourself that remember the film with such great reverence and tell me how good I do. I mean, I get fan letters every now and then from a young kid that'll see it. And, you know, I won't return anything that comes to my house, but once in a while, my agent will get someone sitting up to me and it'll be a 9 or 10 year old kid that, well, I just saw you and I'll write them back a letter. You know, it's really, really, really kind. You know, I'm really interested in, I want to do films of the history of indigenous people. You know, you always see Last of the Mohegans and then you see Thunderheart. What happened in the early 1900s, 1910, 1920, 1930, 1940. I always like to ask the elders. I said, what was it like being on the reservation in, you know, in 1930 or during the Depression? It's a really interesting time, you know. And a lot of the land and resources that were taken during World War I and World War II for the war effort, you know. So, I mean, there's a whole interesting piece of history dealing with indigenous people that they haven't really, really put on film yet.
Would you write that?
Boy, I tried writing again. You know, like I said, I'm a fan of, and now I realize I know how you write a bad script, but I will watch like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. Go, what makes this film work? Are Raiders of the Lost? What? Why is this a good film?
Or Outlaw Josie Wells. Or Outlaw Josie Wells.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah, you bet. Wonderful, wonderful film.
Yeah.
Dan George, I'll tell you an interesting story. The first day we hit Santa Fe and we're in a big, big fancy restaurant and they were just finishing up Josie Wells and there's Dan George, you know? And he looked at me, you know, and he says, Who is that Indian boy, you know? Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, he's gonna be Tonto Lone Ranger, and he says, step outside with me. And we had a long talk and he said, do you know your culture and are you respectful and you know some of your language? And we talked for about 45 minutes and he said, I'm really glad you're doing this. He walked in and the people I was sitting with go, your food is cold. I said, oh no, when an elder like that says come, you do it, you know?
Well,
so that's one
you
of
know
my-
what that, look, I watched the film very, very recently and you telling that story puts your performance into perspective a little bit more. Just even knowing that was the background. Look, here's some more perspective. My wife, I thought she had seen the film before. She hadn't. So we're watching. I'm doing homework. We're watching it. She's not a fan of the new one. That's putting it mildly. Let's put it that way. She watched. We're getting this. Well, no. Here's the thing. We get to your scene. We get to your intro scene where you're saving John Reed, played by Clinton Spilsbury. And here's her quote. Now this is a good Lone Ranger film. That's from somebody. Look, this thing's 30, what is it, 36, 37 years old? The math escapes me. Well, but
I think if they would have got a better, if they would have cast the Lone Ranger a little better, it would have been a bigger hit.
All right, here we go. You're jumping ahead, but let's go to it. Your relationship with Clinton Spilsbury
was wonderful. He treated me with great respect, great dignity, great kindness, but he had other problems.
He
didn't feel comfortable in the role, and he had some secrets that's not my place to tell you. You know, and they dubbed his whole voice in, which I think broke his heart. That's why he's so hard to find now, I think.
When did you both know that was happening?
I didn't. I wasn't paying attention.
was it after the film premiered? Like, did he know they were going to dub his voice ahead of time, or was it when he saw the film?
I think it was after. I don't really know. It must have been in post-production, you know.
Do you think they should have
dubbed his film? You know, his performance was not stellar and not exciting, but Stacey Keach's voice and his timbre was very close to Clinton's real voice.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, because this is very fresh in my mind, and now I'm watching it with 2018 eyes, not, you know, my 13-year-old self. I'm watching it again and I'm thinking, boy, when they're in the stagecoach, there's no because they're being attacked, there's really no sense of urgency or anything in the dubbed version, which there probably would have been with Clinton because he was in the stagecoach.
Well, obviously, maybe there wasn't.
Okay, well.
I didn't know a lot about filmmaking, you know. Okay. I've been on film sets, you know, but I didn't know a lot about filmmaking, so I was just having a ball.
Did he sound like Urkel, or like, what was the deal? Because I don't think we've ever heard him. I don't think he's ever given an audio interview.
Between you and me and fairness?
Yeah.
When I heard Stacey Keach's voice, I didn't hear that much difference between him and Clinton's voice.
Okay.
But, you know, I didn't hear the audio. I didn't hear a lot of it. So, and like I said, I wasn't paying attention. I was having a ball. You know, I'm a guy, I hang with the crew.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hanging with the Wranglers. You know, I'm hanging with my friends. My friends are coming to visit, laughing their ass off, going, look, there's Michael playing Tonto. You know.
You got a call at 3 a.m.?
Yeah. He had gotten in some kind of a scuffle in the hotel room with some local gentleman, and they kind of kicked his butt. So,
what started that? Because I've heard the ending of it. What started it? Do you have any idea?
I haven't.
You never asked him about it.
No. We never got into much about his personal life.
Did you respond when they called you?
No, the funny part of it is the story, the security guard calls me, wakes me up. And he's like, yeah, the Lone Ranger's down here, and he's been in a scuffle, and I think he's got a black eye or something. And I'm like, hey, look, this Faithful Companion stuff is in the movies, man. This guy's on his own. He goes, yeah, I'm going to come into it, man. I don't have anything to do with it.
No Kimo Sabe?
He was not kind to some of the local people there. He was not liked. Okay. I mean, they got his... They got his butt pretty much right out of town.
Yeah,
you know, he was not kind to the locals. And
did you get a sense that? Well, okay, so what were your conversations while you were shooting? Because obviously, look, this is a huge deal. This is a huge deal at the time. To epic characters. Did you talk with Clinton about how you were going to approach this? How much you should go forward? How much you should stay back? Did you have any conversations with him about the characters?
Not a word.
Wow. Okay.
If I had it to do all over again, I mean, look, I'm stunned. That was my acting. I just wanted to not look like a fool.
Yeah, you were new. You were right out of the gate. Yeah.
I was having a lot of fun. You know, they're paying me a bunch of money. I'm staying in a nice hotel in Santa Fe. I'm hanging with all my friends. I brought one of my buddies from LA with me, man, got him a nice job on the film, and you know, and I'm having a ball.
We mentioned Clayton Moore. Did you know about the controversy while you were filming? Because there was like a lawsuit between they didn't want him making personal appearances.
Right off the bat, I knew, which was a big mistake.
Before you even rolled a frame of film.
Oh yeah, I said, wow. Man, you took the mask away from the Lone Ranger. What are you thinking?
Yeah, that's a song, know? Right? Isn't that in a song? You don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger.
Yeah. You know what are you guys thinking? And then when Clayton had told me what he had approached him with, I went, oh, they were fools.
Mm.
You know, okay. But I am. You know, I'm talking all these years later. I'm talking to people like yourself and to young people that grew up with it, have a fondness of it. So it's made me look at it again with more of a fondness. And I didn't have, you know, I had a ball doing it, and I just wondered how I was going to navigate after this. Would I ever have a career again?
Right.
Would I?
No, you came off unscathed in the film. I think if anybody came off unscathed, it was you. One of the Lone Rangers you did get to work with was, well, I don't know if you got to, you didn't get to work with any scenes with him, but I know if you get to meet him, was John Hart was in the film. Who?
Oh, yeah. We had dinner a couple of times.
Okay.
You know, so it's.
What did you think of the whole thing?
He was just glad to be working again.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and the girl that got to play the Lone Ranger's love interest, I did not get that. I didn't, you know.
Yeah. No, I want to talk about some of these scenes too. The Canyon Massacre. Were you on location for the actual shooting of the Canyon Massacre?
Oh yeah, I was watching it because all the stunt guys were friends of mine, man. You know,
okay.
I mean, you know, they were all buddies of mine. So I was there when the stagecoach, you know, ran over.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about this because as a stuntman, he was trying to do the old Yakima Canut under the stagecoach, right?
And then Yakima told him he'd done it in two separate gags, but he wanted to do it all in one. And he had done it in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's the same one that went under the tank, you know?
Okay, so you got to talk to Terry Leonard when after he, like, what happened with that?
He went sideways and the stagecoach ran over his legs.
Busted his leg.
Yeah, but he's tougher than, I mean, he went over the falls and the Fiat Romance and the Stone. You know, and I would run into Terry from you know, and talking to Farnsworth, you know, who's just a freaking legend, and you know, a lot of those guys, you know, and
Jason Robards. Jason Robards, you got to work with Jason Robards.
Oh, Jason was wonderful, you know, and Christopher Lloyd. Christopher Lloyd was wonderful, and
he's insane, you know, in this film. We go back to the script. I can't imagine a better Butch Cavendish.
Lloyd's insane in real life. I can't quite figure him out how much of those characters are him and how much aren't, you know. He pretty much stayed by himself. He didn't even stay in the hotel. He rented a little house and, you know.
Okay. No, I wanted to ask you about that. Did he didn't stay in character though, did he?
No. You know, and again, Bill Fraser and Laszlo Kovacs, you know, I mean, Bill and I stayed friends till the day that he passed. I would go down and see him, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and Bill was kind of heartbroken that the film, that was his first directing, that what didn't, you know, but it was in the script and it was in the casting, you know, it had an opportunity there and it didn't, you know, which is good for me. If it would have been big success, I'd have been, that's who I would have been, you know, for, it would have been hard for me to get out of that. And I, you know, I escaped it and got to have, an interesting career. They dig me. Now I'm officially the old guy in the sci-fi films that goes, don't dig there. There's always some old guy who goes, don't dig in the burial ground. You know, my wife goes, do they ever listen? No.
No, of course not, because then you have no drama. Well, that's the other thing I want to ask you about, too, was the fact that nobody sets out to make a movie that doesn't do well at the box office, but if it had done well at the box office, obviously, they would have talked about sequels. I mean, Clinton Spilsbury was interviewed afterward, and he said, "Nah, I don't think I want to do another one." But you were interviewed afterward, and you said, "Yeah, I'll do another one." Sure. Okay, what would you have liked to have seen in a sequel?
Oh God, dealing with more native issues. You know, more with the devastation and the poverty on the reserve, and more with native issues. you know, you could have done, it was a great time to do some stuff about the environment, about, you know, about mining and, you know, what the railroads did. Also, I worked on Hell on Wheels, which was one of my favorite things to do, because it's the true story of the railroads, when the first real evil corporations, you know, I mean, Citizens United came out of the railroads, and I got to be on that. I got to work with Common, which was great. I got to play the Comanche chief and work with Common, who was such a sweet man. So nice, you know? So yeah, well, probably one of my favorite contemporary Western things was Hell on Wheels. Really, really good historical piece.
Could they, and again, we talked about the Depp version and Army Hammer. Could, it's such a challenge with this character because the TV show didn't work. The last movie didn't work. Could they, do you think they could do a Lone Ranger and Tonto today that's encompassing the things that you're talking about? Like maybe them taking on the government and these bigger issues?
The TV show was so bad that they wanted me to play Tonto's dad, you know. And
oh, they did ask you to come in for it.
Oh, yeah. I said, Tonto didn't have a dad. If he had a dad, he'd have a last name. And, you know, right away they're all pissed at me. But when I read that script was just horrid. I went, I'm not doing this. You know? I don't care how much money it is. It's not going to happen. But I'm sorry. I got off track. But
No. But I mean, like, do you think they could do is the franchise just gone? Or do you think there's something they could do with it?
Oh, I think it's gone, man. I think Tonto's put away for a real long time. Pretty much death killed it.
Wow. I saw you with a picture of you with a chicken on your head.
Boy, you get on. You really get on stuff, man.
I dig deep, man. I dig deep, brother. No, that's like
everybody kept asking me, "What do I think of the film?" And that was pretty much my
What is up with that? You've got a perspective that none of us have. Is there a reason, like, he's feeding a dead bird on his head?
Well, there's a picture. There's a lot of old historical pictures with Native people with a bird on their head. You know, it's
okay. Are they feeding it?
You get the no. Yeah, his comic buffoon Tonto thing was a big mistake. You know, and getting, you know, they should have gotten, you know, even like when I first did it, they should have got a full blood guy right off the res to do it. Somebody like a young Jay, in my opinion. Thank God they hired me. I wouldn't have casted me in it, you know. So,
okay, no, fair enough. I mean, I'm glad they did because I thought you did an amazing job. But that's certainly a fair point.
I mean, I get offered stuff that I just can't do. They go, "You want to play Sitting Bull? No. You know, you want to play Geronimo? No. Have you seen a picture of Geronimo? You know, I'll play Quanah Parker or you know, but a knight. Yeah, just some things I just can't do. Yeah. You know, it's just disrespectful, and it's just bad art.
One of the things you do is voiceover work. We love that. Can you give us a little bit of insight into how you got into voiceover work and your work in the DC Animated Universe with Andrea Romano?
Oh, well, they were looking for people to do, you know, they finally got a clue that we really want Native people to do Native voices. So they started calling me and I would do a couple. And then after a while, they knew that I could do it and it was really fun and you don't got to get dressed up and you can go down there and look like you slept in your car and they don't care. but the directors of animation are the most serious directors I've ever worked. I actually had a lady was screaming at this other guy, "You're a hamburger, not a hot dog." And he's going, quicker, you know. And it's like when you're in school, you know, they'll get through doing all of it and they'll go, you can go, you stay, because they want to hear what they hear in their head. Mm-hmm. You know, I just did the audio book for Twin Peaks. I did the Hawk and I did Chief Joseph, which I think I did a really good job.
A lot of people listening in, they probably recognize you from Twin Peaks. I wanted to ask you about that too, because look, everything's a reboot. Everything's, you know, they brought X-Files back. They brought, you know, they brought Mark Hamill back as Luke Skywalker.
I was on X-Files. I was on X-Files too. I was actually on one of the actual, that's a real case. That's one of the very few actual FBI X-File cases was the one I did.
Oh, that it was based in reality?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you know, wow.
And Chris, the creator, he said his favorite line from all the X-Files when the company goes into the Indian bar, and there's an old guy at the end goes, "Go home, FBI." But Twin Peaks was great. I mean, I must have saved a busload full of children in a former life, because I keep getting all these, you know, Twin Peaks, as far as a native character, it was wonderful. He held some mirrors up to some stereotypes and you know, and did away with some of them. And I've known Lynch since the 70s. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. And I knew we were doing something special, but it took me 25 years to realize the impact that Twin Peaks made off of television. Everything I like now, American Gods, Legion, I'm Preacher. I love Preacher. It's one of my favorite things. All has Twin Peaks' DNA all over it.
Yeah. What was it like coming back after a quarter century to this world of Twin Peaks?
It was wonderful. I thought, well, you know, how's it going to be? And, you know, Kyle's a big star. Everybody was so sweet and so kind and so giving. You know, and I thought everybody was asking me, are you going to be in the remake? And I went, nobody called me, you know. And
really?
Lynch called me. He was doing an art show. And he went, It's like talking to somebody out of a 50s sitcom. He goes, "Hey, buddy, we're getting the gang back together." And I went, "You got something for me?" I thought, "Give me a cameo. It's not even about the money. Just give me a cameo."
Yeah, because they brought you back for the movie, right? Even though, like, your stuff got cut?
Yeah. Well, he was kind enough. It was a four-hour film.
And yeah.
He was kind enough to – he called me and said, "Look, we cut you." And
but of course they were going to bring you back for the series, right?
Well, who knows?
Yeah,
who knows
true.
What's in David's head? But they were really kind. I mean, I got some wonder. I got to say goodbye to the log lady, and you know, and I didn't realize how fond people were of the character, the Hawk. Like, they try and get me to do these. They want me to go to Comic-Con, and I went, and I did the film. I did the Twin Peaks thing in London, and people were just great cheer out to the Hawk, you know, which is.
No, you've got this like genre background. You got the Twin Peaks stuff, you got the animated stuff, you got the Lone Ranger stuff. Is there a character right now that you want to do that you haven't done that you would like to sink your teeth? Either animation, voiceover, or like you said, something like everything's a comic book now. Everything's comic book based. Or there's a show that you want to be on that you're like, "Oh, I got to get a role on this one."
Oh, Preacher.
Preacher's
I would be Preacher for free. Oh yeah, Preacher. Have you seen Preacher?
I have not. It's a little bit outside my wheelhouse, but I've heard some things about it.
And it's, you know, they're bringing a lot of these.
It's a little warped,
novels.
Right? I don't think it's as warped as the comic book, but
Well,
but Seth Rogen, I think, has TV-ified it. I think
all the fans that you're out there, if you want to see I have a film coming out. I don't know if it'll make it to the theaters or if it's going to go to Netflix. It's called Dead Ant, A-N-T. Now, my wife is a big-time activist, works for environmental issues and native issues, and she was supposed to go a year or so over to Paris to the big conference. My agent called and said, "I got an independent film," which is pretty much it's inside for they don't have any money.
Yes.
So I said, "No, I got to go to Paris for this. You better read this." And it's a cross between the 50s sci-fi film Them, about the giant ants, Spinal Tap, and Road Warrior. It's so funny. Sean Astin's in it, and the little person from Seinfeld, and Gary Busey's son, and one of the girls from The L Word, and one of the guys from The Entourage. And it's the story of a 70s hair band called Sonic Grave. And they had one hit, a power ballad. There's all kinds of jokes about how really sissy power ballads are. They've been trying to get on top for years. And they're going to, their manager, Tom Arnold, has got them going to Coachella, right? And they've got like an antique trailer, and they're going across the desert when he goes, "No, I couldn't get you into Coachella. We're going to No-cello." And they're going, no. So they stop off to the res out in this fruit stand out there. They hear that there's an old guy that's got some peyote. So they go out there, and these guys are just, they're like every 70s band you ever saw, you know. And they're going, "We want some peyote," and myself, the old guy, and with my little assistant, Firecracker, which is Danny Woodburn, who I just loved working with and been a fan of his for years. And I said, "No, you guys, I'm not giving you boneheads. This is not going to happen." So they leave. One of the girls comes back and says, "Please." And I said, "Okay, but you respect it. You go out to the sacred place. You say your prayers, but you respect this medicine, or things will happen." They went, "Yeah." Well, they screw with it. and one of them steps on an ant. Well, these ants start to grow, and every time they kill them, they get bigger. And it is. I told my wife, I go, you know, this could be the new Spinal Tap. I do not want to, you know.
Yeah, the craziest thing ever.
I'm waiting for it.
All right. Well, that's why you need social media pages to let us know about all these different things. Look, we talked about your artwork, too. I want to make sure I get the website in. GatheringTribes.com.
Yes.
And if they go to /products/Michael-Horse-Jewelry, they're going to find your artwork. Is there any chance that you would, as the silversmith, create the amulet that Tonto gave to John Reed?
No.
So close.
No.
I was so close.
You know what I did? I almost had you
convinced there for a second, though, didn't I?
When they were doing the Flintstones movie,
they had these little
Flintstone kind of rings with Fred Flintstone's face on it.
Okay.
And Joel Silvers called me up because I had made some personal things. He goes, I want you to make all these rings, these Flintstones. So I made all the rings for that.
Okay.
You know?
Well, why? You could make a Lone Ranger amulet.
No. Oh. Not gonna happen.
Oh, breaking my heart. You're breaking my heart. Maybe you'll embrace this over the next year or so.
I did make a little silver log for the Twin Peaks fans. It's on the Twin Peaks website.
Right, we'll talk.
And I don't make that much jewelry anymore. I'm getting old, pal. I made a bead a couple days ago. I had to take a nap. You know, so.
Take a nap. We'll talk after the show. Maybe I can get a Lone Ranger amulet out of you. My goodness, Michael, I am so totally pleased that you have spent some time with us today. I'm loving going back and revisiting this movie. I know back in the day it didn't get the love that it needed, but my goodness, like, look, I'll quote my wife. Now, this is a good Lone Ranger film. You made a good Lone Ranger film, my friend.
Well, thank you. Me too. You know, a lot of people call me all the time. My wife, I don't get on the internet. My wife goes, these people are looking for you. They want to interview. No, I don't want to do it. And for some reason, there was a kindness and respect for the character of Tonto and for myself. And I said, yeah, I'll have a talk with this gentleman, you know?
Oh, well.
And God bless all you fans that they're so kind to me. You know, like I said, I just wanted to, you know, when Siskel and Ebert reviewed the film, they left my name totally out of it. And I took that as a great compliment.
what perspective we get over the years.
I ran into Siskel. I said, hey, man, Michael. I said, oh, yeah. I go, when you reviewed me, you left my name totally out of it.
You go, maybe that gave you the career. Maybe that gave you the career you had.
Yeah. So, but, you know, my career is an experiment. I will go for stuff. You know, John Fusco was a friend of mine, and they wrote Young Guns, and it was kind of written, you know, with me in mind. And then he went, "Nah, you're too old. You're not a big enough star." So, you know, I will go for stuff. I have my name all over it, and then they'll give me something out of the blue that I have no business ever getting. So, you know.
Well, we're glad you got Tonto out of the blue, because I'm telling you what, we go back now, and it's a good flick, and it looks amazing. You guys are pretty cool in it. I wish you had gotten a sequel. I think you guys just some bad timing. But my goodness, the career you've had over the years with all these roles. We're loving going back and watching some of these things. And continued success. We're looking forward to these other projects that are coming out too, especially with giant science fiction ants. That's going to be pretty cool. Michael Horse and Dead Ants. What more could you want? Michael, thank you so much for joining me today on the show.
Okay, buddy. And thank you. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, Kemosabe.
Yeah, that's right. You just heard it. Michael Horse just called me Kemosabe. Oh, I love this gig, man. I love doing the show. Folks, that is some fanboy goodness right there. If you have not seen this film, do yourself a favor. The Blu-ray's out there, man. Just go to Amazon, get the Blu-ray. Look, I know this film got knocked around when it was released by the critics, by many people, but I truly don't think that it got a fair shake. There's so many things going against it. There was the lawsuit against Clayton Moore. There's some bad publicity. The stories about Clinton Spilsbury. He quit acting after all this. The Raiders of Lost Ark opened 3 weeks later. What are you going to do about that? You can't control that, right? Incredible cinematography by Laszlo Kovacs. It was directed by a cinematographer, William Fraker. So the film looks amazing. There's a terrific backstory. It's got a great script. More than we got in the original TV series. And it's got my wife's seal of approval. I mean, what more can anyone ask, right? You want more? Terrific performance by Michael Horse as Tonto. He is amazing in the film. Huge thanks to Michael for joining me today. Look, when we get more word on those upcoming projects, I'll pass it along to you. All right, that is it for today. Time to saddle up and ride on out of here. But just like we return to those thrilling days of yesteryear, I will return to the lair very soon. Here's the deal. Had a few conversations scheduled to air on the show, but had to move things around due to San Diego Comic-Con. A few folks were set to hang out here in the lair, but they had to push some things off for their appearances in San Diego, so things got moved around a little bit. Next week might be a little bit crazy for me as I record episodes. I'm trying to record a bunch and get them out to you, so not sure what's going to be coming at you first. Schedules are being worked out as we speak, but rest assured, I am working on some big, big moments here in the lair. You are all, of course, following the show, right? On comicbookcentral.net, blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. You've subscribed in iTunes. You're catching the show on Blueberry, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to The Lair. And wherever you share The Lair, share it. Click share. Share it with your friends and family, especially social media. Facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Twitter @comicbookctrl. If you're following it on all those places online, then when I announce my next guest, you will find out about it. Until next week, my friends, keep riding high in the saddle, keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Kimosabi.
What?
Kimosabi.
Tonto.
Yes.
And Tonto recognized John Reed by the amulet he wore. But John had once saved Tonto's life, so this evened up the score. Tonto had to hide his friend and keep him out of town, because if Butch had known that one ranger lived, he was sure to hunt him down.
The white man has made many promises to us, yet they keep only one. They promised to take our land from us, and they took it. You see the suffering and the misery they bring to your people, yet you bring one to us to nurse back to health? Tonto, why?
Nobody has reason to fill their hearts with hatred for the white man more than I. He's taken from me my wife and my child. But the man I brought here is my brother, and I will protect his life with my own if I have to. And if I'm wrong, and he proves to be an enemy, then I, Tonto, will decorate my lance with his white man's hair. But until that day comes, let him not be judged by his color, but by his heart, as a man and a friend.